All right, let's jump into this. You shared some materials on a really interesting legal thing that seems to pop up pretty often, especially when contracts and real-world projects, they don't always go as
Oh,
planned.
yeah.
And we're going to take a deep dive into a specific case today.
Okay.
Roberts Contracting Company versus VWR.
Right.
And think of this case as like a perfect example of the kind of balancing act that courts have to do. When a job isn't finished perfectly, but the question is, what's fair compensation for the work that was actually done?
Yeah, I think what's really fascinating about this case for anyone who's studying contract law is that it really grapples with this idea of how do you practically deal with these complex agreements in the real world, because it's rarely the case that you have a large project that goes, completely without a hitch. And so the law needs to have ways to address those outcomes when they're not ideal.
And so here's kind of the basic setup for this case. We have Roberts, who is a construction company.
Go away.
They were contracted to build a sewer system for VWR. Makes sense.
But the project, it ran into some delays, and eventually Roberts actually stopped working before the entire system was totally operational.
Oh, wow.
And then, of course, VWR was like, well, we're not paying you the rest of the money then. And this is what led to this whole big legal battle.
And I think it's worth noting right from the beginning that some of the initial delays weren't completely Roberts's fault.
Okay.
VWR was responsible for getting these things called easements, which are basically like the legal right to use someone else's land for a specific purpose. And so there were some holdups in getting those easements, which obviously impacts the whole project timeline. And this is something that comes up a lot in construction disputes.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what makes this case really insightful, I think, especially for like law students or people who are really trying to understand contract law, is that the court didn't just come in and say, okay, this party is totally right and this party is totally wrong.
They really had to grapple with these fundamental questions, like, at what point do we say that someone's contractual obligation is like done enough to where they should get paid?
Right.
And what happens if the work isn't totally completed, but the other side has still gotten some value out of what's been done?
Right.
And so this is where we get into these concepts of substantial performance and unjust enrichment, which might sound like a lot of legal jargon, but are actually really important for understanding how contracts are enforced in the real world.
And if we kind of zoom out and look at the bigger picture of contract law, these are really important doctrines because they're designed to avoid these really rigid outcomes where it's like all or nothing, right? Because sometimes that's just not fair. You can imagine a situation where there's this tiny little defect in this huge project, and if the law was just completely black and white, then that one party could get away with not paying for 99% of the work that was done, even though it's basically done. So these doctrines of substantial performance and unjust enrichment, they kind of try to create a system that's a little bit more fair and equitable.
And I think that's what makes this case so interesting is because it really digs into those nuances. So our mission today in this deep dive is to really understand when can a party still get paid, even if they haven't completely 100% met every single one of their contractual obligations.
Okay.
And we're going to use Roberts versus VWR as our case study, our main illustration for this. We'll kind of break down what happened step by step, how the court thought about it, and most importantly, what are the big principles that we can all take away from this?
Sounds good.
So to set the stage here, we're talking about a contract worth over $2 million.
Wow.
And the initial goal was to finish this project by April of 2005. But like we already talked about, there were those delays with VWR getting the easements, and that pushed the deadline out to October of 2005.
Right. But even with that extended deadline, Roberts still didn't fully complete the sewer system. By May of 2006, they just completely stopped working. They claimed that VWR was making it impossible for them to finish the job, but bottom line was that they abandoned the project without that most crucial element, a working sewer system. And that became the core of the whole legal fight.
So at this point, VWR is like, okay, well, you didn't finish it, so we're not paying you the rest of the money. Which, on the surface kind of makes sense. They're arguing that the fundamental purpose of this whole contract was to get a functioning sewer system,
Right.
and that just didn't happen.
Yeah.
So obviously, Robert sued for breach of contract, saying, hey, we basically did the job, we deserve to get paid. But then, of course, VWR countersued for damages, saying, hey, we had all these costs because of the delays and because the work wasn't finished. So it goes back and forth, this legal battle. And the first round, the trial court actually sided with VWR. They said, no, Roberts, you didn't substantially perform your obligation, so you don't get that final payment.
Oh, wow.
And on top of that, you owe VWR money for these liquidated damages, which were basically preset amounts agreed upon in the contract itself to compensate for the delays.
Okay.
But as often happens in these legal cases, the story didn't end there.
Of course not.
It gets appealed. So Roberts appeals the decision, and the Arkansas Court of Appeals, they actually reversed part of what the trial court had said.
Interesting.
And this is where things get really interesting, I think, for our deep dive, because now the appeals court, they can't just look at whether the contract was perfectly fulfilled or not.
Right.
They have to consider, does Roberts deserve any money for all that work they did? And to figure that out, they really had to dig into this concept of substantial performance. So can you actually, you know, for our listeners who might not be super familiar with all the ins and outs of contract law, can you give us a clear definition of what substantial performance actually means, legally speaking?
Yeah, sure. So at its core, substantial performance basically means that a party has, in good faith, done the main essential purpose of the contract, even if there are maybe some minor deviations or things that weren't done exactly according to the specific tiny little details. The whole idea is to avoid a situation where someone who did most of what they were supposed to do gets denied any payment just because of these little tiny things that don't really affect the main goal of the agreement.
Okay, so it's not about like absolute perfection in every single detail, but more about whether the main point, the intended outcome of the contract, has been achieved.
Exactly.
So in the case of Roberts versus VWR, did the appeals court think that Roberts, by building a sewer system that wasn't actually operational, did they meet that standard of substantial performance?
Well, that's the really key point here.
Yeah.
The appeals court said very clearly that Roberts did not substantially perform.
Okay.
And their reasoning was really focused and direct. They basically said the whole point, the essence of this contract, was a functioning sewer system. Without it actually working, the whole goal that VWR was paying for, the main reason they signed that contract, wasn't met.
Right.
And the court even used this really strong language to emphasize this. They said, and this is a super important quote, a working sewer system was the essence of this contract.
And that makes total sense. I mean, you can't really say you substantially completed a sewer system if it doesn't actually work as a sewer.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be like, say, you know, I substantially built a car, but I just forgot to put the engine in.
Yeah, you just missed the whole point.
Yeah, you're missing that core functionality. So the court drew a line in the sand there. They said, look, while Roberts definitely put in a lot of effort, time, materials, laying down those pipes, and doing other construction work, they ultimately failed to deliver on that main purpose, that specific thing that VWR had signed up for. And because of that, the court considered this a material breach of the contract, meaning a really significant failure to meet their end of the bargain. So, you know, maybe if they'd used a slightly different brand of pipe than what was specified, but it didn't actually affect how the sewer worked, maybe that would be considered substantial performance.
Okay.
But a sewer that doesn't actually function, that's a fundamental flaw.
Right. So if Roberts didn't substantially perform, does that automatically mean they get absolutely nothing, zero payment for all the work that they did?
Well, not necessarily. And this is where our second big legal idea comes in.
Yeah.
Unjust enrichment.
Okay.
So do you want me to break that one down?
Yeah, yeah. Can you kind of explain what that means?
Yeah. So unjust enrichment is a legal concept that's all about being fair and just. It basically says that if one person gives a benefit to another person, and that second person keeps that benefit without paying for it, and it would be unfair for them to do so, then the law can step in and say, hey, you got to pay something for what you got.
Okay.
And this can apply even if there wasn't a valid contract, or like in this case, if one party messed up, they breached the agreement, but the other side still got something valuable.
Right. Because even though Roberts didn't completely finish the job and give VWR that working sewer system, VWR still ended up with a partially built sewer system sitting there in the ground.
Right, exactly.
That's not like they can just ignore all that work and material, right?
Yeah, and that was the court's thinking here. They recognized that VWR had gotten a real tangible benefit from all that work that Roberts had done, even though it wasn't 100% functional. So now the legal question becomes, how do you fairly pay Roberts for that part of the benefit they provided without completely ignoring the fact that they didn't finish the whole job as promised?
Right.
And so The court came up with this idea. They said, okay, we're going to look at the reasonable value of all the labor and materials that Roberts put in up until the point where they just stopped working.
Okay.
But, and this is super important, from that amount, they then subtracted any costs that VWR would have to spend to finish the sewer system.
So basically they were saying, okay, we'll give Roberts some money for the value they created, but we're also going to let VWR deduct the costs they incurred because of the unfinished job.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
And there's one more piece to this calculation. They also factored in the liquidated damages that VWR was entitled to because of all those delays that Roberts caused. Okay. So it wasn't just a simple payment based on the original contract price tag.
Right.
It was much more nuanced than that. The court was essentially saying, okay, Roberts, you didn't deliver the finished product, but VWR, they get some value from the groundwork you laid. So they owe you something for that, but not the full price, and they can also deduct their losses because you didn't finish the job.
Yeah, it's like the court stepped in and tried to create this kind of compromise.
Exactly. And the way they did that was through this idea of unjust enrichment. So Roberts was able to get some money back, but not under the original contract itself.
Okay.
Because they had broken that contract. They got it through this sort of quasi-contractual theory of unjust enrichment. And that's a really important distinction for understanding how these kinds of legal disputes get resolved.
Now, let's go back to those liquidated damages for a second.
Okay.
The trial court initially awarded them to VWR, and the appeals court agreed with that part of the decision, but they only allowed them for a very specific time period.
Right.
So what was the reasoning behind putting a limit on how long VWR could claim these damages?
Well, this gets to a really important rule about liquidated damages clauses.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be a reasonable estimate of the actual harm the non-breaching party, in this case VWR,
mm-hmm.
is likely to suffer because the contract was broken. They're not meant to be a punishment, right?
Right.
They're meant to be compensation for real losses. So in Roberts versus VWR, the court looked closely at VWR's claim for these ongoing delay damages that continued even after Roberts had walked off the job back in May 2006. And they basically said, look, we understand that Roberts' initial delays probably cost VWR some money, but it's not fair to just keep claiming damages for delay forever, even after Roberts wasn't even working on the project anymore.
So it wasn't just this never-ending penalty.
Right. It had to be connected to the actual harm caused by Roberts. The court essentially said that once Roberts abandoned the project, VWR had a duty to try and fix the situation themselves. You know, like hire a different contractor to finish the work and mitigate their own losses.
Right.
And so they said the liquidated damages should only apply to the time period where it was clearly Roberts' fault that things were delayed and where the harm was a direct result of their actions. And in this specific case, the appeals court limited the damages to the period between May 1st, 2006, when Roberts stopped working, and August 24, 2006.
Okay, so that's a pretty narrow window.
It is.
And that really shows how important it is to not just slap a liquidated damages clause into a contract without thinking it through.
Yeah.
It has to be a genuine, fair prediction of how much money someone might actually lose if the contract is broken. It can't be just a way to punish someone for not doing what they said they would.
Exactly. And the appeals court's decision really drives home that point. They're not saying liquidated damages clauses are bad or that they can never be enforced.
Right.
But they're saying the courts are going to look at them carefully and make sure they're being used for the right reasons.
So let's zoom back out now. What does all this mean for our listeners? This deep dive into Roberts Contracting Company versus VWR shows us that in the world of contract law, especially when we're talking about these big complicated projects, it's rarely a clear-cut case of you win, you lose.
Right.
Even if a job isn't completed perfectly according to the contract, and legally that might be called a breach of contract, the courts can still consider whether the other party, the one who didn't breach the contract, got something valuable out of the deal.
Yeah, and this concept of unjust enrichment that we talked about, that acts as a safeguard to prevent one party from basically taking advantage of the other's work. Even if that work wasn't perfect, they can't just walk away with a freebie.
Exactly. And in this case, even though Roberts didn't hit that substantial performance mark because they didn't give VWR that working sewer system, and remember that key point from the court, a working sewer system was the essence of this contract.
Right, right.
Even though they didn't do that, they were still able to get some payment for what they did do. And that was calculated based on how much VWR actually benefited from the work, minus the cost they would have to spend to finish the job, and minus those limited liquidated damages for the delays.
And I think this case also highlights how important it is to be super clear when you're writing a contract, especially when it comes to defining what the main goals are and what exactly completion means. The fact that that sewer system wasn't working, that was the make or break point here. So when you're drafting your own contracts, it's really worth thinking about what's the absolute must-have outcome? What needs to be done for this contract to be considered fulfilled?
And on the flip side, if you're the one receiving partially completed work, you can't just say, well, it's not perfect, so I owe you nothing.
Right.
The law is going to step in and say, no, 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 you got something out of this. You got to pay something.
Exactly.
So it works both ways. And finally, the court's scrutiny of that liquidated damages clause, it's a good reminder for everyone out there that when you're drafting contracts, you got to be thoughtful. Those clauses need to be tied to actual predictable losses, not just some random penalty.
Absolutely.
So one last thought for everyone out there to ponder.
Yeah.
Thinking back on Roberts versus VWR, how do you think this whole case might have played out differently if the original contract had been structured differently?
Wow.
Like, what if instead of one big payment at the very end, they had set up a series of smaller payments, maybe tied to specific milestones or phases of the project?
Right.
You know, could that have prevented this whole legal mess? It really makes you think about the power of a well-written contract and how that can potentially save everyone a lot of time, money, and stress down the line.
Absolutely. Food for thought.
Food for thought.